Welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, April 17th. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, despite cost concerns, Humboldt Soups continue cannabis grant program. Rio Del Mayor speaks in Sacramento to support state bill expanding disaster aid for rural communities. And world's billionaire count hits record high. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. One of the grants in Humboldt County's Project Trellis program will be continued despite cost concerns. KMUD's Daniel Mintz reports.
Despite concerns about the cost of administrating it, a Humboldt County cannabis grant program will be renewed. The discontinuation of Project Trellis's local equity program was up for approval at the April 15th County Board of Supervisors meeting, but a majority of supervisors voted to continue to seek funding for it. The program's aim is to compensate for impacts of years of law enforcement actions during the pre-legalization era. It's being used to help cannabis farmers pay their Measure S excise taxes, county fees, and property taxes. The state funds it, but requires the county to pay a $100,000 match. Earlier this year, the state approved $657,000 in funding for the local program. But when staff work is figured in, the program's cost is estimated at $150,000. During a public comment period with sparse attendance, Natalie DeLapp of the Humboldt County Growers Alliance acknowledged the program's cost, but highlighted its benefits.
I just want to acknowledge that these are super complicated grants to administer and that the state is absolutely not giving enough funding to administer these complicated systems, and then they go back and audit, and I know it's a total pain in the butt. But that being said, these are the only types of funds that come in that can be accessed by our people, which are cannabis operators. We don't have access to the traditional type of grant making that is available to other small businesses. So these types, and specifically this grant, is very, very important.
Supervisors discussed narrowing local equity grants to the easiest thing to administer, payments of cannabis farmers' Measure S taxes, which would go directly to the county's treasurer tax collector. Then there was the question of whether to continue the program next year. In this exchange between Supervisor Mike Wilson and Economic Development Coordinator Ryan Heights, the cost of the equity program was described as expensive, even if the focus is limited.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, if we kept it just kept it at Measure S without...
It would be challenging, and okay. I am still concerned about the overrun of expenditures outside of the period of performance.
Okay.
I think that it's more manageable than if we were to keep it with all of the current service items.
Okay, so if we just pared it down to the most simplest thing, you're still concerned as to whether or not the investment that we make in it will actually be recouped.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that is that's sobering to me, and speaks to a system that, again, we did not create and is challenging for a lot of people.
The county has a $10 million budget deficit that is projected to grow in the future, and there's fears of layoffs and service cuts. County Administrative Officer Alicia Hayes said overruns on the program's administrative costs will be covered by the county's ever-pressured general fund. But Board Chair Michelle Bushnell, whose supervisorial district gets the county's largest share of overall Project Trellis funding, pushed for continuing the program.
So you still have a lot of Measure S out there, current and past due, with a determination of suspending, revocating all of those permits December 31st that haven't paid Measure S. So you're going to have a lot of farms dropping, I would anticipate. I still think that the program is valuable. And while it's going to cost the county $150,000, what you're getting back is exceeding that through the Measure S, if that's the direction of the board.
Supervisor Natalie Arroyo said she's, quote, inclined to keep doing this despite the burden. And Supervisor Rex Bone said some of the grant funding won't have to be administrated because, quote, I've already had enough phone calls saying if they don't get their money by this season, they're done anyway. Seeing the way the board was going to go with it, Wilson made a motion he'd end up voting against to accept the current fiscal year's local equity program funding with a focus on Measure S and to direct staff to apply for next year's funding. The other supervisors voted in favor of the motion. Supervisor Steve Madrone was absent. In Eureka for KBUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Last week, Riodelle Mayor Deborah Garnes testified before the Assembly Committee on Emergency Management in Sacramento in support of AB 262. The bill would establish the California Individual Assistance Act, creating a state-funded disaster assistance program to support individuals, families, community-based organizations, and local agencies impacted by disasters, particularly those that do not qualify for federal aid due to damage thresholds, a common issue in rural communities like ours, which was highlighted in last week's newscast when we reported that recovery is still ongoing 15 months after the Humboldt earthquakes. Despite the extensive damage caused by the December 2022 magnitude 6.4 earthquake, which cost millions of dollars and destroyed or severely damaged hundreds of homes. The bill, authored by Assemblymember Jessica Coloza of Los Angeles in response to the devastating wildfires in January, was the first item discussed during the hearing.
When a disaster hits, what communities and families need most is immediate access to resources so they can meet their most essential needs. AB 262 will establish the California Individual Assistance Act, creating a grant program administered by the Office of Emergency Services to provide direct financial assistance to local agencies, community organizations, and individuals with disaster-related costs.
If passed, the bill would create a state grant program to provide financial aid to individuals and families for housing, personal property replacement, medical expenses, and income loss. Reimbursements to local agencies and community-based organizations, and funding for evacuation and local assistance centers.
Many individuals and families without sufficient resources for recovery are left without sufficient resources for recovery, particularly in cases where federal disaster aid is not available. This disparity has highlighted the need for a state-level program to address the urgent needs of disaster victims, such as housing assistance, groceries, income replacement, and medical expenses. AB 262 will facilitate quicker recovery for local agencies and community organizations who are on the ground.
Riodelle Mayor Deborah Garnes was among those who highlighted just how impactful this bill could be for small communities.
Good afternoon, Chair Ransom and committee members. I'm Deborah Garnes, Mayor of the City of Riodelle. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of AB 262, and we thank Assemblymember Coloza for authoring AB 262. Which will create the California Individual Assistance Act to provide financial aid and disasters costs not eligible for federal assistance. Riodelle is a small town of 3,400 residents in Humboldt County with a median household income of $36,000, significantly below county and state averages. We're a severely economically disadvantaged community. On December 20th, 2022, Riodelle was struck by a 6.4 magnitude earthquake with a ground acceleration of 1.4 Gs. That was the third highest ever recorded in the state of California. The damage impacted 25% of homes, interrupted water, power, and communication services, and displaced 300 residents as 94 dwelling units were red tagged. A second 5.4 earthquake struck on January 1st, creating further damage. The estimated damages in Riodelle were well in excess of $32 million. Despite this immense impact, this event wasn't declared a federal disaster because FEMA's threshold for California is $72 million. Apart from the SBA and the USDA, through low interest loans, the federal government played no role in response or recovery from the earthquakes. The lack of a federal declaration not only slowed the recovery, but caused increased stress and suffering. This inequity will likely not be addressed by the feds soon, if ever. Without a federal declaration, we were not afforded individual assistance, which provides crisis counseling, legal services, disaster unemployment insurance, housing assistance, and critically, disaster case management. Instead, Rio Del relied on voluntary donations to assemble recovery services. This shouldn't happen in our state. The federal threshold will only increase, and philanthropic assistance isn't guaranteed in future disasters. AB 262 recognizes that communities need help with both infrastructure damages and individual recovery after disasters when federal assistance is not available. And for these reasons, we support AB 262.
While Democratic Assembly members expressed strong support for the bill, their Republican colleagues voiced dissent due to the assistance it might offer to undocumented community members.
Pardon me if I am wrong about this, but ma'am, the mayor of Rio Del, I think you're being used as window dressing to a bill that's truly not about your community, but rather opening the door for taxpayer funds to go to people here illegally.
Well, just to clarify, there's nothing in this bill that has any language about citizenship. And so I, you know, appreciate your effort to
It says California Individual Assistance
I wasn't finished talking, but let me answer your question. This bill is about helping victims and families and people, especially all of our local communities who don't qualify for federal FEMA dollars, including your own community, should there be a disaster that happens, God willing, God forbid, in your district.
Assemblymember Steve Bennett, a Democrat from Ventura County, expressed support for the bill, but noted that securing funding will be the greatest barrier to its passage.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate this bill, the author bringing this bill forward. My colleague just pointed out, we've had this bill in front of us before, and the bill has been held up in appropriations, and it's held up in appropriations because there's not a funding mechanism attached to this bill. The estimates in the past have been $1 billion for this bill, and I experienced in my county, we've had over 1,000 homes burn, and many fire victims, and we wrestled with the same thing, which was no funding for individual assistance, and that was being had to be taken care of by the nonprofits in our county. So I just want to be realistic as I support this bill, that without a funding source, it's very difficult to think that the bill will move all the way through the process.
The bill required two-thirds of the votes to move forward.
AB 262, the motion is due pass to the Committee on Appropriations. Ransom?
Aye.
Ransom, aye. Hadwick?
No.
Hadwick, no. Arambula?
Aye.
Arambula, aye. Baines? Bennett?
Aye.
Bennett, aye. Calderon?
Aye.
Calderon, aye. DeMaio?
No.
DeMaio, no.
Thank you. The vote is 4 yes to 2 no.
With only 2 Republican committee members voting in opposition, the bill passed and is now advancing through the legislative process. It still faces 4 additional committee hearings and 2 floor votes before it can be enacted into law. Rio Del is listed as one of the 7 official supporters of the bill. KMA News will continue to follow and share updates as the bill moves forward. In state news, California college students protest repression of immigrants and pro-Palestinian advocates. Christina Onestad shares this report.
Down, down with deportation!
Down, down with deportation!
Up, up with liberation!
Protesters marched and rallied outside the ICE Immigration and Customs Enforcement building in San Francisco against what they say is the deployment of immigration officials to attack and intimidate student organizers for Palestine. Speakers included students from Stanford, San Francisco State, and other Bay Area campuses. Lena, who did not give her last name, is a student organizer from Stanford. She spoke out against what she called campus complicity in the repression of the pro-Palestine movement.
How can we possibly sit still and continue life as if nothing is happening when the universities in Gaza have been completely annihilated, knowing that our universities played a role? How can we just blatantly accept the verdict that Mahmoud Khalil is deportable for the sole reason of speaking up against the deplorable Zionist regime and the genocide it has been carrying out for the past 18 months? We can't and we won't. This isn't normal, and we'll refuse to make it normal.
Jaden Jacqueline from San Francisco State University says there's commonality between repression of students voicing support for Palestine and repression facing immigrant communities.
Today, the despot Trump announced at a press conference with El Salvadorian President Nayib Bukele that he's open to deporting American citizens to El Salvador, a step beyond their current tactic of sending any Latino person with tattoos to that concentration camp in El Salvador. This is what happened to Camilo Armando Abrejo Garcia, who was illegally snatched up in Maryland and the Trump administration refuses to return to the U.S. Shame!
As protesters were gathering in support of Columbia graduate student organizer Khalil Mahmoud, U.S. immigration authorities arrested a ninth Columbia student. Palestinian student leader Mohsen Madawi, who has a green card, said he was called in for an interview as part of his citizenship process. Upon arrival at a Vermont immigration office, Madawi was arrested by plainclothes officers in broad daylight. He co-founded the Palestinian Student Union with Mahmoud Khalil. Christopher Halali is Madawi's friend.
Just for exercising their constitutional rights and standing up for Palestine. That's why we believe that they were detained and they're being targeted in a vicious campaign online and with the administration's support, the Trump administration's support, to get rid of these students who have divergent viewpoints than the administration. Mohsen has always been at the forefront of peace and really strengthening ties between the Jewish, Muslim, Christian communities, between Palestinians and Israelis. And he's always been a very big advocate for reconciliation, for dialogue.
Madawi now faces deportation to the West Bank, which the United Nations has warned is on the verge of becoming another Gaza due to Israel's months-long campaign against Palestinian dissidents and militants. His lawyers say the ICE move is a gross violation of his free speech and plan to appeal the deportation process. Organizers of the Monday rallies are demanding the immediate release of all those arbitrarily detained by the government, an end to all forms of repression to the student movement for Palestinian human rights, an end to Israel's war in Gaza that human rights groups have called a genocide, and for the U.S. to cut all ties with Israel. Reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA, I'm Christina Onnested with David Hummel.
In national news, some 1,400 military and overseas ballots could be tossed in the uncertified North Carolina Supreme Court race. The State Department closes its office monitoring foreign disinformation. And GOP-led states move to end mail-in voting grace periods. Catherine Carley reports.
Those who raise their hand and get first in line to serve our country should not now be first in line to have their votes tossed.
North Carolina Supreme Court Justice Allison Riggs says she'll fight as long as it takes to ensure every vote cast in the November state Supreme Court race is counted. Despite beating her Republican challenger by more than 700 votes, a state court has ruled some 1,400 military and overseas ballots will be discarded unless those voters provide a copy of their photo ID within 30 days. Some military spouses have sued to block the verification process. Democratic lawmakers are in El Salvador pushing the release of Maryland resident Kilmar Abrego Garcia, who the White House says was deported and sent to a maximum security prison due to an administrative error. The Supreme Court has ordered the Trump administration to facilitate his release, but officials say their hands are tied. Garcia's wife, Jennifer, says she remains hopeful.
Kilmar, if you can hear me, stay strong. God hasn't forgotten about you.
Meanwhile, a federal judge says he's found probable cause to hold the Trump administration in criminal contempt of court for violating orders to temporarily halt deportation flights. The State Department's main office for fighting foreign disinformation will close. Republicans have accused it of coordinating with social media companies to stifle conservative opinions worldwide. Michigan Congressman Bill Huizenga says American voices were also silenced in the process.
Freedom of speech is a God-given right enshrined in the First Amendment of our nation's Constitution. It is a right that President Trump and his administration are committed to zealously protecting.
The Trump administration has fired or reassigned dozens of officials who monitor U.S. elections for foreign interference and protect against cyber attacks. GOP-led states are complying with President Donald Trump's recent executive order prohibiting the counting of mail-in ballots that arrive after Election Day. At least 18 states and the District of Columbia allow grace periods, often due to slow postal service. Utah Governor Spencer Cox says the public wants to know the winner on election night.
Anything we can do to help people have more faith, restore their faith in Utah's elections, we should be doing that while still balancing that we should make it as easy as possible to vote.
Republicans argue without evidence that mail-in ballots are a source of voter fraud. The New Hampshire Senate has passed a bill requiring people who vote by mail to provide proof of citizenship with their ballots. The bill also applies to voter registration by mail. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Forbes has released its 39th annual World's Billionaires list, revealing a record-breaking 3,028 individuals worldwide who each hold a net worth of at least $1 billion. Collectively, they are worth over $16 trillion, surpassing every national GDP aside from the U.S. and China. This marks a $2 trillion increase from 2024, with the average billionaire now worth $5.3 billion. The United States leads with 902 billionaires, followed by China with 516, and India, 205. Among this year's headline makers is Elon Musk, who reclaimed his spot as the world's richest person with an estimated $342 billion, largely driven by gains in SpaceX and his AI company, xAI. Meta's Mark Zuckerberg ranks second with $216 billion, followed by Amazon's Jeff Bezos with $215 billion. Bernard Arnault of Louis Vuitton Moet Hennessy fell to fifth place after a decline in luxury goods stocks. This year also welcomed 288 newcomers, including cultural icons like Bruce Springsteen, Jerry Seinfeld, along with tech and AI moguls. The wealthiest new entrant is Marilyn Simmons, worth $31 billion, and is the widow of hedge fund titan Jim Simmons. The list includes just 406 women, 13.4% of the total, with Walmart heir Alice Walton now the richest woman globally. Forbes reports that 67% of listees are self-made. The youngest billionaire is 19-year-old Johannes von Bombach of Germany, while the oldest is 103-year-old insurance magnate George Joseph. Meanwhile, 107 names dropped off the list this year, including leaders in tech and luxury goods. Notably, Donald Trump saw his wealth more than double to $5.1 billion, following a surge in Trump media stock and cryptocurrency investments, just ahead of returning to the White House. The full 2025 list of the world's richest people is available on Forbes.com. KMA News would like to credit Chase Peterson Whitthorne, whose original reporting we relied on for this piece. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Patricia Tinkler. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Christina Onnestad, and Catherine Carley. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms. If you have a question or suggestion, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.